Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, your Northeast hunting and fishing destination. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angelo.
And we're your hosts. Join us as we navigate the woods and waters of the Northeast, sharing our passion for the outdoors.
Whether it's land management, outdoor recreation, hunting, or fishing, we're going to cover it all. With 40-plus years of experience in the Northeast, we'll provide insights, tips, and stories to help you make the most of your adventures and help you experience the wild.
So, tune in, grab your gear, and let's hit the woods together. And always remember, success is just a commitment away. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Wing and Tail Boys podcast. As I record today's intro, it is Tuesday, May 13th. And for today's episode, we're going to be welcoming back George Huang of Fire Knock. And we're going to be continuing that conversation from 2 weeks ago where we started talking about vanes and arrow control. Now, in that first episode, we really laid the groundwork for what we want to get into today. We talked about the material that vanes are made out of, how they function, the manufacturing process, and how they're made and cut and sized and colored, and the variation in grains, all that great stuff. We talked about the industry standard and how the typical arrow is built and how vanes are used or interpreted in the whole arrow flight scenario, I guess you could say. In today's episode, we kind of start to straighten some of those things out. We talk about how the veins function, what they do for the arrow, how they stabilize the arrows, all that great stuff. And again, I think today's episode has the meat and potatoes information that archers are looking for when they start to research information about the veins. Now, before we get into today's episode, just got a couple quick updates for you. This past weekend was the second turkey weekend for turkey in both Pennsylvania and New York State. I haven't gotten out in Pennsylvania yet, but I was able to get out in New York this weekend. Saturday, I put a really, really short sit out, didn't really have any action, but in the second half of the day, I was able to get into the food plots, which we're going to talk about that in just a second. On Sunday, I went out and I was able to sit for like 3 or 4 hours. Did some calls, moved around a little bit, set a couple sets. Now, while I didn't set any eyes on turkey, I did hear some gobbling off in the distance. And that was really cool to hear. To be honest with you, this weekend was more about just getting out, clearing my mind a little bit, putting some of life's recent changes into perspective. And I was able to leave the weekend with a clearer mind than I went into it. And I think any outdoorsman can agree with me when I say that in itself is a successful harvest. Now, what we did in our food plots and what the game plan here is we went out this weekend and we sprayed our food plots with glyphosate. I sprayed every square inch that I could. My plan is to kill off everything. We've been fighting weeds for way too long. And this year I've made it a point to get them under control, at least the best that I can. I plan on going back one day this week, either during the week or over the weekend, with my leaf blower. There's way too much leaf litter. In the past, we find that when we have leaf litter, it really hinders our seed-to-soil contact, and it makes for really patchy food plots over the summer and into the fall. So this year, I really want to get ahead of that and try to bite that problem in the butt before it comes up. Once I leaf blow, I'm going to take our Vitalize Seed Annual Clover Mix, and that is going to get sprayed probably in overseeding, a little bit more than the bag calls for, but we're going to be spreading that across every food plot in preparation to prepare the soil in preparation for the fall planting of the carbon load in their 1-2 punch. We're really, really excited to try that out. We're really hoping and expecting this year to be the best food plot yet. So we're really excited for that. But last but not least, don't forget the special promotion that we are running for Truth Sticks Custom Arrows right now. If you leave a 5-star review down below, we're going to cover your shipping. If you follow us on Instagram, we're also going to save you $5 on your order. And if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, that's going to save you another $5. So depending on where you are in the country, that's a total of somewhere between $20 to $25 savings. It's a great deal. Make sure not to miss out. So without further ado, we're going to get into today's episode. I want to thank you again for joining us this week. And remember, success is just a commitment away. Now, a quick word from our title sponsor and the episode to follow. Have a great week. Winged Tail Boys Podcast is brought to you by Truth Sticks Custom Arrows. Built with FireKnock technology, Truth Sticks Custom Arrows simply fly flatter, spin faster, and improve arrow efficiency downrange. With two signature arrows for the compound bow and a signature crossbow bolt, they've got something for everyone. If you're ready to take the guesswork out of archery and take the best performing arrow into the field, then check out Truth Sticks Custom Arrows at wingandtailoutdoors.com and experience the truth of arrow flight. We're coming to you after having some technical difficulties, so we're going to try to run this back again and start it all over from scratch. On today's episode, we're continuing our conversation from last week where we started to break down the effects of arrow veins. What do arrow veins do? What are they there for? What are the different materials, the different ways that they're built? And then we talked about some of the misconceptions about veins out there in the industry. We talked about what people think happens when you put veins on and, you know, helical or, you know, a crazy offset. And then we kind of broke down exactly what happened. So if you haven't listened to that episode yet, I strongly recommend you go back and take a listen to that one before listening to this one, because this is going to build on the last episode. And if you didn't hear it, it's not really going to make much sense. You're not going to have the foundation that you need to understand what we're doing today. Now, here to join me again to continue this conversation is George Huang of FireKnock. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing quite well.
Awesome, awesome. So we were just talking about the weather that we've been having lately. And here in Pennsylvania, we finally just hit 50 degrees yesterday. You finally hit 50 degrees today.
Yesterday afternoon.
Okay, gotcha.
Just recently, we got all our snow melted, ice melted for a change.
Same thing here.
Solar panels are doing fantastic.
That's great. We ended up having an issue where we got snow,
Then it was freezing rain. Then it snowed again. Then it was freezing rain again. And when it was all said and done, we had about roughly 3 to 4 inches worth of just straight up ice. I was having to walk my wife down to her car in the morning because our driveway like is steep at the top and then kind of like levels out down at the bottom. Yeah. So whenever you're going down, you know, you're going downhill. And the crazy thing is the entire county here is out of salt. There's not a single bag of salt in our entire county. So I had to go out.
Show.
No,
it's you happened to Chicago.
Yeah. So I ended up getting some sand, hoping that it would improve the traction. But what I actually found out is that the sand also defrosted the salt. I don't know if it radiated more heat, but then it makes sense because anyone who's gone to the beach before knows what it feels like to walk on hot sand. So I guess that makes some sense. So what we want to discuss more importantly today is we want to finish the conversation about veins, finish up, you know, anything that we didn't touch on in the last episode. But then we want to also break down the effects of the veins. What do veins do for your arrows and what can they do to hurt your arrows in flight? Now, before we get there, I want to ask you a question. My cousin and I were just talking about something this afternoon. Whenever I see a video on Instagram where somebody shoots a deer relatively close, say it looks like it's under 20 yards, anytime there's no penetration, I always send them the video and say, look at this, another arrow under 20 yards, no penetration. And then we end up, you know, getting into a conversation back and forth. What we got into is we started breaking down the video and we saw that the gentleman in this specific video was using a Rage broadhead or something extremely similar to a Rage broadhead. And he took a shot at this mature deer that was basically walking. It was facing him, but with the head kind of like turned off to the left a little bit. And when he took the shot, he either hit the low spine or the top of the shoulder. The arrow only went in not very far at all, maybe 4 or 5 inches. He ended up getting the kill. But then we started talking about why it happened. And he said most likely it was the Rage broadhead. It was the fact that it was a mechanical that he shot into bone. I said, I probably agree with you, but I also think it had a lot to do with the type of arrow, the FOC, and whether or not that arrow was recovered. And then he posed the statement saying that he thinks that if it was more of a broadhead thing, if it would have had the right broadhead, it probably would have gone through. I said, you're probably right. But I also think if he had a better built arrow, even if he didn't get a full pass through or full penetration, it still would have penetrated farther than it did. And I was just curious what you think about that scenario.
We're almost at 100% green up in the mountains of New York, which means the majority of the country is in spring or summer food plot mode. If you're in the market for some seed this year, you have to make sure the Vitalize seed is on your list. Whether you're running a traditional system or a no-till system, they've got you covered with products like Annual Clover, Clover Plus with Chicory, or their 1-2 punch of Nitro Boost in the summer and Carbon Load in the fall. They've also got natural amendments to help give your food plots and seeds the boost they need to thrive. More important than that, Vitalize Seeds' focus starts with the soil to help solidify your plots for years to come. So whether you're looking for some seed this warm season or simply looking for some answers to your questions, head on over to VitalizeSeed.com to find your solutions.
I don't think I got enough detail. First of all, what did he actually shot into? What space is he shot? Did he touch your shoulder bone or are you going to the lungs?
Well, we think from the picture, it's obviously hard to tell because, you know, it's not ours, but he either hit the top of the shoulder or the spine down the back of the deer.
Oh, then it's dead. For sure.
Yeah.
When you do that, to be fair, like you, in most cases, anytime you use a mechanical broadhead that with big blade, when the animal is not killed instantly, any movement of the animal will create more trauma. In other words, the cutting surface increased dramatically. To be fair, like you, in today's most, is that the two-blade broadhead. As long as you can put the arrow into the boiler room, as long as penetrate more than one lung, you usually would able to kill the animal quite effectively. Because as you say, it was a big, ginormous boiler, it's close to 2 inch, and there's an animal move, that thing is going to cut. And eventually you're going to cut something serious, and then it dies. In those cases, yeah, the Rage broadhead did its job. But at the same time, you may want to think the entire shooting scenario. Because like everything said and done is a combination of the delivery plus accuracy plus what it does. I mean, if the person just sling at the animal, then the biggest broadhead is the best as long as it makes the contact.
Right.
That is the time that your speed become your enemy. You want to shoot below 280, if not 270.
With mechanical specifically?
With anything. Because see, that moment, you don't pass 280, 70 feet per second, the aerodynamic characteristics of the arrow is not that dramatic. Remember, just like all the days when people, or say 2009, 10, most people don't shoot over 300 feet per second. That's the reason majority of people don't have that much problem. As long as your arrow is well-tuned and the body is straight, the arrow will fly reasonably straight and the vane don't have much effect on it. I mean, none of them have any major effect. Even spine alignment, straightness, none of them really matter much. As long as the broadhead is indeed true to the shaft and spin true, that will fly well. Which is also why the time that when new archery product make the Razorback and all the rest of the broadhead compared to, say, a satellite Titan, a satellite broadhead, or your earlier Muzzy, true in true. Even the reason for that, if you look at the AMO, which is the now become the ATA standard, the tolerance between the shaft and the insert is so big. When you screw that thing in, even with the slight chamfer on the edge, the tolerance allowed is close to 5,000. That means that when you screw in, how do you guarantee your broadhead or your viewpoint is truly centered with the insert, is truly centered with the shaft? If that is not, your arrow flight will be totally off. To the friends, I'd say, well, 3-4 inch group is a pretty good thing at 20 yards. So at that moment, the bigger the broadhead you got, the better off, as long as you made it. But then, as distance increases and the speed increases, all those swing factors, your entire arrow control in higher speed become a very big problem. Which is also why a lot of people like put four vanes, long four vanes, which you drag the arrow down from the backside, which is instantly cause a directional control in the issue. So they put more weight in the front. Well, when you do that two things, what happened? Your arrow speed go down. Now aerodynamic is not critical. Arrow reaction is not critical because see, the arrow reaction and vanes are more critical as long as you don't shoot over 280. It become absolutely critical at 315.
Okay. That makes sense.
Then you, on top of that, you remember when you're dealing with a really big broadhead, like the original, like the Bear two blade or any of the major two blade was not ported. Now you're going to slave with two masters. Which one is the main? The broadhead, because in the front, you guide any way you want to. The vanes on the back, as long as the speed is not high, it doesn't have any authority. You just sort of drag along. So you're just creating some drag. There's no lift. There's no nothing. You just drag along. I mean, that's the reason when you shoot big broadhead, feather is the king. And don't shoot over 300.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, but the moment you go to crossbow in today's world, that whole thing just throw out the window so fast, it's not even funny. Right. And you know, I deal with all the earlier crossbows.
Now, what about when we go in the other direction? Because one of the things that we were talking about in this conversation was kind of like a little bit of, we were talking about arrow concept and he just built a set of arrow concepts. So he's been in contact with you. And we were talking about, you know, he said 30 yards and on, I see the benefit 100%. He said under 30 yards though, he goes, I don't know that it's going to make that much of a difference. And I, you know, responded with below 22 yards, you should see a difference because the arrow is recovering faster. I mentioned all of this to paint the picture because he responded with, when he shoots his traditional bow, the arrows are doing this through the air and they penetrate very, very well. So
because traditional bow, first of all, your entire draw cycle is different. Your arrow recovery is different. The archery paradox on a traditional bow is very important because that is how the arrow energy transfer and the arrow recovery and the entire power delivery reaction is significantly lower. I mean, just like another gentleman just emailed me, put a comment on my Facebook page. He said, is 20% FOC more accurate than a 15% FOC? I say that depends on what bow, what arrow, and what type of configuration it is.
And
if you're shooting a recurve, 20% FOC absolutely better than a 15% FOC. But then you shoot a compound bow, I can tell you it's absolutely not the case. And also depends on how thick your arrow and how you hit the arrow right to the right spot. With 20% FOC shooting a recurve, that's a pretty aggressive setup. The arrow had to sustain a lot more. But then depends on, is it a Black Widow or simply a Japanese recurve or a Turkish recurve or some of the non-aggressive recurve. The non-aggressive recurve, the 20% would be better. But the more aggressive recurve, like a Turkish recurve, no. That's not good. Now, if you shoot something like a Japanese long off-center recurve, like the one that's like 15 feet long, a kneel-down bow, I would tell you the high FOC will absolutely do better because you're shooting the arrow off-center. So the heavy FOC is going to give you the recurring control. And not to mention, that bow will never reach high G-force. So the FOC is going to be your best friend. So it depends on the design. I mean, if you really look at that Japanese off-center recurve, think about it. The bow is about, I would say, 8 foot long. You're holding it from the bottom about 20 inches. So you see how off. When you're trying to pull the bow back, the whole bow looks weird. But then this is the time that there is technically no major force on the arrow. The arrow just like launch out. But the arrow launch out very, very smoothly. You technically have no G-force on it.
So the arrow itself,
the FOC become more important than anything.
So the arrow itself, because of the way the arrow transfers the energy, it doesn't have
the bow to transfer the energy. The arrow actually launch out technically straight.
Right. I was just going to say that it doesn't have the initial bend at the moment or the initial flex at the moment.
The G-force is so comfortable and so calm. That arrow is launched out like a bolt. So that's the heavy FOC. It's going to be your best friend.
So then it's safe to say, and we've said this before in the past, that you can't look at every single person and say, this is the arrow you need to shoot. It's every person is going to have their own custom arrow.
Not to mention the situation and what they're looking for. I mean, I use my best analogies. I say, what's the best vehicle for you? That's a trick question, isn't it?
Depends what you're doing.
Is it a motorcycle, a skateboard, walk, a four-wheeler, 18-wheeler, a bicycle?
That makes sense. Vehicle. Are you riding alone? Are you taking kids to sports? Are you picking up the teammates? Are you carrying product? So, yeah, no, that all makes sense. So,
in the case of bow and arrow, are you hunting close range? Like a lot of my customers did in Prince William County. Most of them shoot under 20 yards. And they need to kill the animal immediately. Or in up to second gun season in Illinois, in the southern Illinois, you're not going to shoot anything under 65 yards. You're lucky to aim from there at 85 yards. That's the reason if you talk to Andy out of... Triple Archery will tell you. He is famous for building arrows for 120-yard shots out of vertical bows and deer. No, I'm not joking. He's one of my certified trained dealers. Talk to him. He don't really have a choice. You want to hunt? 60, 85 yard is your minimum.
That's incredible. I couldn't imagine that being the minimum.
It's like liking doing January pronghorn in New Mexico. How close is it going to get?
Close. They're usually out in the open.
One of my good dealer who no longer, I think he's going to another. I remember he's on a cover. He shot that pronghorn at 125 yards. High wind, dropped it. He was using the Strata SL-71, 380 grain arrows, arrow concept 2.0, whole 9 yard.
Right.
With arrow ring 3.
I mean, that distance is probably nice to have.
But you need the speed. Without the speed, it's not going to do the job.
Right.
Now, let's go back to the vanes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's a good segue into getting back into the conversation. Now,
see, the vane itself, you need to think about the vane in most cases, your speed, your initial launch speed, just like, I don't know who asked me. You say, I'm at 200. Oh, one of my customers. Yes, he asking me, hey, Dodge, should I go to Arrow Wing 3? I said, what are you shooting? Base 4, 65 pound, 29-inch draw. I said, why do you need Arrow Wing 3 for? You're lucky to have 280 feet per second. If you're shooting 10, sure, go Arrow Wing 3. But the moment you're hung with it, Arrow Wing 3 don't give you stability, not at that speed. You need to understand Arrow Wing 2, Arrow Wing 3, and normal wings, they all have a specific characteristic. Just like one of my dealer, Broholder Archery. Besides his target bow, he don't use a single piece of arrow wing. Because he don't know, he wanted to sell all kind of broadhead with the customer able to shoot with it. just like you're shooting a 10.505. You have 505 feet per second. You want to throw, you can tell your customer you can only use this, this, and this broadhead, and end of story.
Which I think we're going to end up getting into today. At least I know we don't want to like go, we don't want to try to go into broadheads in depth. But I think we're going to have to end up touching on that if we're talking
about it. Because see, that is the time that the master and slave issue on a broadhead. I mean, with all the, just like when Boot Fulton was still alive, I was doing a testing for him. He was designing the Ramcat, the original Ramcat, the 1 3/8-inch cut Ramcat. It works great with Aerowing 2. It worked great with Aerowing 3 too, as long as you don't shoot over 315 feet per second.
But what happens with the Ramcats if you do go over 315 feet per second?
The Aerowing 3 don't control it.
Gotcha.
You need to go in the Ramcat SVG, which now you cut the blade tip off. And then the entire cut surface of 1 3/8 become 1 inch. And then I found out that the trailing vortexes of the blade, I had to physically design the blade into a single bevel cut top and bottom to give the blade a cross-section behavior like it was slanted. Because the yawning and relief of the air pressure due on rotation become more critical. Because see, the moment you pass 315 feet per second, the aerodynamics and rotation, the rotation with aerodynamics and the vortexes the vane actually created, and the individual boundary layer separation on the broadhead blade all become important. I mean, you need to understand, if you shoot a vertical bow, you don't really want to go into all this unless you're like crazy like me. When I was shooting my Expedition Eccentric SD, my arrow was actually at 355 feet per second. Now you're talking all the aerodynamic stuff. But then you better know your stuff really, really well.
Exactly.
Because you can do amazing things.
Yep.
I mean, you can ignore 35 miles per hour wind. You can shoot a much lower FOC because your gyroscopic projectile have your own tracking. I mean, you'll recover so much faster. I mean, all those things are great. But you need to know what you're doing. You can't just like slap the thing together and say, oh, I expect it to do great. No, it won't. I will guarantee you.
Exactly. Even when I emailed you, I don't know, it was like maybe 2 weeks ago now, we had talked and I told you I wanted to build Aero Concept and I gave you the list of things I wanted and I said, I'm either going to shoot Aerovane 2 or Aerovane 3. You pick the one you think is best. And it took, you know, Aerovane 2, right? So I want to give a couple numbers for the listeners that we had broken down last week so that way we could kind of build on it, because not only do your vanes create lift, like we were talking about last week, they don't use drag in the way, wind drag and drag resistance, the way that a normal vane does. And this is what it does for the arrows. We're going to compare it to the original traditional blazer vane. At 260 feet per second, a blazer vane will do about 8 to 12 rotations in the first 20 yards. Aerovane 2 will do 30 to 50 rotations in the first 20 yards. And Aerovane 3 will also do about 30 to 50. Once you get up to 315 feet per second, Blazer is still only doing 8 to 12 rotations in the first 20 yards or less. Aerovane 2 is doing 60 to 90 rotations in the first 20 yards. And Aerovane 3 is doing 60 to 120.
Yeah.
The last interval we did was 350 to 400 feet per second, which, let's be honest, at that point, we're getting into the crossbow realm.
Correct.
Blazer vane now does only 8 to 10 rotations in the first 20 yards, while Aerovane 2 does 90 to 120, and Aerovane 3 approaches 280 full rotations in the first 20 yards. And we're talking about a 600% difference between Aerovane and the original Vic Blazers and Aerovane 3?
No, it's not 600%.
Whether you're a competition archer stepping to the line in the finals or a hunter drawing back on your personal best, you owe it to yourself and the animal to have the best functioning equipment out there. That's why when it comes to bow or arrow components, the Wing and Tail boys pick Fire Knock products every time. Every product they make is proven to outperform anything already on the market by 50% or more, and they have the science to back it up. They've even made it so easy to find the components specific to your arrow shaft with their FireKnock Arrow Component Selector. If you're ready to up your equipment's performance today, check out fireknock.com.
It's 2,800%.
That's right. Yeah, that's even crazier. Now, I'm sure the listeners are sitting
here. This is where the thing really changed. Now, think about it. At 60 yards, which is where the 50 to 60 yards where we do most of our testing it, with the Doppler radar test and also with Dave Murray's test, the blazer actually at that moment will slowly turn between 8 to 10 revolution at 400 feet per second over the 40 to 60 yards. Okay? The AeroVane 2 is doing about 100 to 150 revolution. Still significant.
Uh-huh.
The AeroVane 3 is doing a full revolution at every 2.5 to 2.25 inches. Uh-huh. If you divide the 60 yards, like 20 yards, 20 yards is how many feet? 20 yards is 60 feet.
Uh-huh.
60 feet times 12 is your inches. Then you divide it by 2.25. That's your answer.
Now, and that we're getting into that math stuff again here, Dorge. But so the listeners,
people say, how do you know? I say, well, you got a Pepsi bottle of this wide. Then you see a white wing and one black wing and two white wings. You count the black wing, hit it, come out before you come out of the Pepsi bottle. The black wing is on top again. Well, what does that tell you?
That's awesome. I love that. It's because you take a fixed distance, focus the high speed camera on that, and you can probably literally count the rotations as it goes.
Yeah, because you can't really do a lot of things. You can now have to remember the arrow is slowing down because it went through a Pepsi bottle with fluid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that fluid in it too.
Yes.
I thought it was an empty bottle.
No, because we want to see the hydrodynamic characteristic and also the cavitation characteristic of the broadheads. That was the reason we tested that. Then I said, whoa, what did we just see on the side?
So you were really testing your broadheads, and maybe you did or didn't find what you wanted to about the broadheads.
We know the AeroVane was doing fast, but that was a little bit more than I thought.
Right.
No, that little bit more.
A pleasant surprise, as they say.
You just put a 300 revolution. It's 30 times more. Well, not triple, but 30 times. Or in the case of percentage, 3,000%.
That alone is incredible.
And then, now you're creating a whole lot more problem. You're forcing the arrow to have a huge amount of torque in it. Remember, the tail now has all the dominance because the aerodynamic series. The wing is turning it. But then at the same time, if the arrow was not launched correctly, with heavy FOC initially, the arrow is flexing like crazy. At that moment, where is the angle? Where is the paint, the veins, each in the veins vortex pointing at?
All over the place.
The arrow is coming curved like this. So the vein is on it. The direction of the vein lifting is this way. So it's this. Nothing to do with this, isn't it? I mean, if you look at the frontal, if the vein is go up and the vein is turning, you want the arrow to go like this.
Yep.
It's not going to work right.
And then that arrow is flexed. And as it's rotating, the flex is also rotating with that arrow. So the veins are literally pointing in all different directions.
Anywhere except where you want it. That's the reason.
Exactly.
The size of the arrow has to be important. The thickness of the arrow, because the recovery rate, the recovery spine of the arrow, the torsion of the arrow. Remember, the arrow was coming out supposedly, but remember your serving is turning, forcing the arrow to turn left, and the vein is causing it to turn right. The vein is still on the string, so it's reasonably straight. So at that moment, the vein is already getting some airflow. The more you go past the vein, the arrow flexes. And then this is where all things go into, I mean, the word chaos. Because when you shoot up with 300 feet per second, unless you really design the arrow correctly, it's a controlled chaos. Now think about it. The moment your arrow left your string, theoretically it got 7-inch brace height. The arrow is moving forward. Your front of center, the arrow is recovery on that. The arrow is pointing in the right direction because the front of center is controlling that. If your arrow is soft, which is low FOC, a high FOC thin, the arrow will bend significantly more. Now, individual vein, you now have individual vein because of the direction of the shaft bending, a totally off center. And at the same time, the arrow is turning to the left while it was flexing.
Right. So I've got two questions for you on that.
Mm-hmm.
The first of which, you and I made a point about trying not to talk negatively about anyone specifically in these conversations. But I am going to reference someone who's really big in the FOC universe right now. We're talking about Troy from Ranch.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. As long as you're shooting a recurve.
Yeah. Now, my question is, he when because he is essentially who I heard back in the day when I built my heavy arrows. And his big thing is go 200 spine, go 250 spine, and load up the front of the arrow. If you can get over 20% FOC, you're going to kill anything that walks.
I mean, it's not wrong. Because at that moment, you're defeating the entire arrow energy transfer process. You've got enough spine to offset the spine. At the same time, you're increasing the weight of the arrow significantly. You're also dropping the arrow feet. At the same time, you're changing the behavior of an arrow to more like a spear, not a bolt, a spear.
So essentially by, so you can make a heavy FOC arrow work by adding the weight up front, having a heavy spined arrow. And when you go into a heavier spined arrow, the arrow itself is going to be heavier. So you need more weight up front. So you can make it work, but the downside is you're going to slow your arrow down.
Why do you buy any new bows? You're better off using a 1985 Bear. It will launch the arrow better than anything you got and more effectively.
So
it's like, why do you want to, say, put a trailer behind your Ferrari where the Ford F-150 would do a better job and a lot cheaper, a lot better handling?
Yep.
But that's exactly what you do. You simply take a Ferrari. I mean, how dare I say it? You try to make yourself a Ferrari wagon instead of an F-150.
Right.
You know, guys, in today's day and age, scents, lures, and attractants are a big part of our hunting experience. When it comes to choosing a product, we here at Wing & Tail look no further than Rack Getter Scents. At Rack Getter, you'll find unique, innovative, one-of-a-kind products that bring the deer in and keep them coming back for more. They also have products for bear, turkey, fish, and more. Most importantly, being a local small business, Gerard hand delivers every product to his dealers, so you know he's got his finger on the pulse. So if you're looking to up the odds this fall and you'd like to support a local small business while doing it, head on over to rackgettersense.net and check out what they have to offer.
So let me ask you this. Is there, let's say you were to graph, you were to make a graph to represent FOC with penetration, speed and all that stuff, and then take
them. Have only one thing to do with the only thing is helping a slug force. The design of the bullet, how the bullet enter in the angle, the end of the impact have so much more to do with simply slug force. This is not a bullet. This is an arrow. That's the reason I've got a fantastic discussion with a gentleman when we are in Pennsylvania, and he make armors, knife, bullets, armors. And the moment we go into arrows, I say you need to understand what the arrow does. I say, I don't care what armor you got, unless you got metal and you got ceramic, the arrow will go right through you. Because the cutting ability of an arrow with mass behind it and a continuous length of the arrow, that's where the magic is.
So there's essentially a way to build a balanced arrow and a heavy FOC arrow where they'll behave the same way then.
No, they won't behave the same way.
Okay.
Because anytime you have heavy FOC and heavy arrow, the entire reason to buy a new bow disappeared. That means you're better off using a 65% let out bear. Or simply go to the Golden Eagle.
Revolution.
That will give you a much better effect on the heavy FOC arrow. It's like, do you really want to drive a Honda Accord with tractor wheels on field? Answer is that that's the only way to go. But then why are you driving a Honda Accord on field that is mushy? You should drive a tractor. Yes, you did go to tractor wheels, but that's a Honda Accord, front wheel drive. You're not getting what you need.
Now, my other question for you, kind of going back a few minutes where you had mentioned the bow wants to turn the arrow left. The arrow wants to turn left off the string, but arrow vane only comes with a right-hand turn. If strings naturally want to turn the arrow left, why didn't you design arrow vane to turn left?
Is you want to unscrew every broadhead, unscrew every fuel point on impact?
That's fair. That's fair. What I ended up doing...
Remember, the moment you hit the animal, the entire arrow unscrew itself.
You know what I? You know what I ended up
using and unscrewing because not in turning. You're turning it right off.
You know what I ended up doing to counteract that? I took some pipe tape. You know, like the stuff you thread the pipes with, or that you put on the pipe threads. I put that on the threads of my broadhead, and then used to screw it in. Because when I built my arrows 5 years ago or so now, I forced them to turn left.
Yeah, but then depends on the design of the broadhead. Some of the broadhead design, the moment you turn left, you lost the cutting ability.
Yeah, it was. I was using single bevels with a left bevel, so the broadhead itself was also designed for.
If that is what you want, I mean, you can try. I don't see the major benefit unless you. You can do a left helical or something like that. I remember there were Exodus boys. They did a full video, and then we did a full calculation using a Doppler radar test. So going to the left and going to the right, the difference is less than 0.5% at 50 yards. Uh-huh. Because of stalling of the arrow before you start turning. The start had about, even with the worst case scenario, locking about 3 to 5 feet. In the case of, then we also had to deal with the fact you said that arrow also have torsion. The torsion of the arrow is another major factor based on the arrow design. Because some arrow, the torquing is so bad. Every time you see some of the arrow, when you see the vein going left, right, because the arrow shaft itself, every flex of it, the front to back torque force you to see the arrow turning, the vein turning left, right. It's not because the arrow turns. The broadhead is turning very slowly in one direction, but the flex of the arrow and the torsion of the shaft give you the visibility of the vein going left, right. Now, if it does that, what does it do to aerodynamics? Isn't that interesting?
What does it do to the aerodynamics?
It's screwed up royally. It becomes totally chaotic. That's the reason the arrow cannot be shot over 300 feet per second. Because you cannot control the arrow. Your aerodynamics become unknown. You can't manage it.
You can't control it, essentially.
You can't manage it. It's not matter of control. I mean, the fact is that if every one of your arrow behave the same, then you just look at the result and say, if I shoot this in this condition, then this is how the arrow flies.
Let me ask you this then. I want my arrow to travel as fast as I could possibly get it without giving up the control, without giving up the accuracy, and without losing any efficiency. So let's say someone knows how to build an arrow. They can build an arrow perfectly. Let's just say. What would you consider to be the ideal arrow speed for a compound vertical bow?
This is where the magic and the problem is. First of all, the absolute configuration and absolute brand plus draw length, draw weight, it become a very big issue because you can't tell a customer that's a 27-inch draw to shoot a bow under 80 pounds. You say, I'm length challenged. I have to shoot 80 pounds or else I don't get the speed. Okay. Short draw. Then he say, but then I don't want to hold that long because I can't hold that long. I let off. I need the maximum penetration. Okay, thin arrows, supposedly.
Yeah, right.
Now, you just simply take a hole real deep and jump in it and throw the ladder away.
Because, I mean, everything you just mentioned is compounding what we call the microflex. And that's
not just a microflex. It's also the memory effect. Because then the arrow takes longer to recover. The microflex is what you cause. I mean, that arrow will not be great if you want to shoot long distance. But the arrow perform better when you shoot long distance. See, did you hear what I just said?
Yeah.
The arrow is not great until you shoot long distance. At the same time, you significantly lost power at long distance.
Right. So do they go hand in hand? Does the arrow begin to behave better because it's losing energy?
Because the arrow becomes slower and then it behaves better.
Right, because once it goes below the 280, 270-ish, those aerodynamics don't take the effect, and therefore...
And at the same time, the shaft usually recover better, aerodynamic not so much. At the same time, when you shoot that, the arrow memory effect is significantly higher. So you just go to what the arrow behaves the best faster by losing more energy.
Okay. When you break it down into intervals like that, it makes sense. At short range, it has the most energy, but the arrow is acting erratically. And the longer it travels, the more control the arrow, the more controlled it becomes, but the less energy it has. So you have something
Look at the true energy curve. in today's bowl, this is where a lot of people miss. In today's high let off, I mean, just like, if you insist to shoot 80, 90%, 85, 90% let off bowl, you really need to learn how to shoot low FOC. But at the same time, the large diameter arrow with the heaviest spine you can get.
So literally everything that people are trying to not shoot today is what you need if you're going to shoot a high let off.
But then you also create a problem. The arrow has to be perfectly built. The form has to be pretty good because all the forgiveness is gone.
Is that because of the spine or is that because of the balance?
Because of the directional control of the FOC. FOC always gives you directional control, but FOC also screws up the spine of the arrow. But then the launch cycle, the bow tuning, the arrow spine alignment, they all become important. But if you're able to shoot that, that gives you the best result. It's just like, do you really want a 2,000-meter custom rifle built for home defense when you don't want to shoot over 30 yards? That's your problem.
I got you. So I'm going to be building Arrow Concept 2. For the listeners, that is a 6-inch tube on the front end, a 6-inch tube on the back end. And my goal is to get as close to 7% FOC as possible. What issues am I going to run into building that kind of
arrow? Your form is going to be critical. Uh-huh. Yeah, in other words, your arrow tuning, your node, your arrow rest is going to be more important than you. I mean, Arrow Concept 1.0 will leave some issue with the node control, NODE, where the arrow actually flexes the least. Uh-huh. Because the angle of flexes is not as critical. So that's not your problem. The arrow recovery with Arrow Concept 2.0, fantastic. Because literally, we're talking about close to up to 7 feet if fully recovered and go into a spin mode. I mean, it's pretty incredible. I mean, Tony did that. And when we first saw the information, like, it can't be that good. Is it that good? On his, he was shooting the Barnett reverse draw crossbow. And it's a 22-inch arrow. And he did recover that. It was like, whoa, what just happened? But then remember, in doing so, your arrow rest is not as critical, which is good. But then the arrow ability to maintain the energy is significant. But you know, it's really a very complex build. I don't recommend it. I mean, you put a lot of effort in it. If you want to just play with it, go for it. But then don't expect it to be good because you really take experience and time and failure to know what's right and wrong. No way around it. That's the reason I say, if you really want to enjoy it, stick with Arrow Concept 1.0, then put the tube longer in a higher temperature build, you'll get better results. I mean, just for the reference, the Arrow Concept arrow, by patent definition, the reason I didn't go for 45, because anything beyond that, the arrow don't behave like an arrow anymore. You just shift the center all the way to the back. The arrow don't shoot well. And the spine don't behave well. And arrow to arrow, you arrow-to-arrow consistency become less.
I got you. The reason I want to shoot Arrow Concept 2, to be honest with you, is for all those benefits, but more so than that, it's to get to that 7-8% FOC, that more balanced arrow. Because when I see...
You think on a true gyroscopic projectile, you really want that. But that's where the arrow concept with 2.0 with a low FOC arrow behaves so well, because it's now a true center of the arrow, gravity of the arrow is closer to the middle, uh-huh, not from the front. So you move that. At the same time, when the arrow rotated, the entire arrow is now in a very, very tight rotational mass. That itself gives you so much more energy retain capability. In other words, the arrow will maintain the energy the longest it could. Now, is there anything similar to that? Answer is yes. When people are shooting a super heavy ward arrow, ultra heavy spine, ultra thick wall will give you a similar result, but in that case, you lost the arrow launch cycle capability because your arrow is no longer transfer the energy correctly from your bow to your arrow. That is also why, remember the Japanese longbow we talked about? You're moving to that category now.
So a lot of different variables.
You know, in the earlier days, it's much better for most people to shoot a heavier arrow shaft with a reasonable, 100 grain plus 25 grain if you insert, and then shoot something like a three placers. That combination is a very, very adaptive and very forgiving. And for most people, you know, they don't spend their time really playing with it. And the worst part is that when you go into that situation and you happen to be a saddle hunter, now you compound a problem. Why? When you saddle hunt, what's your form? You don't have a form. You're all twisted to the bejesus. And you expect the form to be good, everything exact, and you want to launch the arrow the way you want to launch it, you're out of your mind. That's the reason I would say, you know, when you look at the entire equipment setup, it doesn't mean you're standing right there with no pressure, low FOC 2.0 on a tech event with some wind. Great. You're now 25 up on a tree and the deer come up on your behind your right hand side. Now you lean yourself all the way to the right and lean back and try to shoot that arrow. Not too smart.
Yeah. So just to touch on that real quick, the best thing I did this past year. So I tried saddle hunting for the first time this year. I didn't like it at first. I sold my gear. The second I sold it, I regretted it. But what I ended up doing instead was I got a hybrid platform where I can stand on it and shoot just like, you know, normal. But if I ever have to get around the back of my tree, I now have the ability to do that. So that for me was pretty cool. But
yeah, for me, I mean, you know, I'm a, you know, with my age, I'm still a tree lounge guy. And I will go up to what, 45 feet up in the air. Yeah. My tree lounge platform all the way out. When I sell a tree lounge, I shoot 345 degrees. Not 360, 345.
Because that's amazing.
Width of the tree.
Right. Now, guys, if you go to George's website, at the bottom of one of the pages is a really cool picture of him. I think you're holding like a camera arm or something, like a selfie stick kind of deal. And you're kind of just, you're just lounged out. It's a pretty cool picture. I like that one. Now we've been talking a lot about the spin of an arrow. And last week, not on a podcast, after the podcast, you and I got back on the phone and we were kind of just bullshitting a little bit. And one of the things we talked about, I asked you if you have ever considered, well, first I asked you if the arrow that we build would be good for turkey hunting. And then I asked you if you had ever considered making a turkey broadhead to fit your system. And the reason you actually said no to both. And the reason you said no is because what you want on a turkey arrow is completely different than what you want on a deer arrow. For a deer arrow,
it depends on your broadhead. Because if you shoot the turkey something like a Spitfire with the blunt point, then the arrow we have is still not good because it flies too fast. You need a much heavier arrow. Because the whole idea of the turkey arrow, you want to transfer the energy into the animal, not go right through it with cut.
In other words, slower.
You want to slow it and transfer the energy of the arrow to the animal. That's the reason a lot of my customers are actually doing a trauma. And they're shooting something like 70-pound, 29-inch draw with a tomahawk arrow, and they loaded the arrow with weight, something like 400-500 grams. Yes. Yes. Now you're transferring all the energy into arrow. In other words, it's a blunt force trauma. Because remember, when you shoot a turkey on the breast, what do you got? You go through his chest muscles. In most cases, the arrow go right through the animal, the turkey will fly away, and nothing happened. Maybe a raccoon or a coyote got a good meal 3-4 days later, because the thing is not going to die. You need to shoot right through the heart or something like that of a turkey into it, under the neck, not on the lower, but higher, just on the neck, and then go right through it. That's the reason I remember when aerodynamics, they come up with the guillotine. Now, that's a good design. But then, you know why the blades worked? Because the guy understands aerodynamics. And the people say, why do I need to put the round tube on the blade when I shoot it? Because the round tube destroyed the aerodynamic characteristic. It's a vortex degenerator. You hear me? It takes away all the vortices that possibly happen. It's a round tube. It's
the slowest
of all form.
It doesn't create
any lift, and there's no directional control. Just go straight with where you have been. You want the longest arrow with no drag, but with the maximum drag. And in other words, it's just like a full feather. So you want to shoot a 36-inch arrow with a 3 long feather and throw a guillotine on top. You're good.
Now, you said that people are using the Tomahawk on a heavy arrow shooting 70 pounds. I thought Tomahawk was designed to be used with high-speed bows. Did I misunderstand that?
We're talking turkey, not deer.
Okay.
Turkey is a different animal. How big is a turkey?
Not very big.
Compared to a deer?
Right.
And when you put that much energy on an animal with 2 legs on the floor, when the energy goes to it, you all go into it.
literally takes him off his feet.
Comparatively, it's like, imagine you standing right there, and when about 250, about 210, 200 pounds, just call you. The turkey itself is something like 25 pounds, if that much. Now you throw a 400 grain arrow right into it and convert all the KE. It's like all of a sudden somebody get a 35 pound axe hit you. You don't have to go through you. You're dead. That was the whole idea. You transfer the energy. Just like if you want a 22 long rifle or a 355 mag for home defense, you'll be dead with a 22 long rifle, because the arrow go through the guy four times and he still kill you. You need to stop him with a 357 mag.
Right. That all makes a lot of sense, because like I said, I'm talking to a buddy of mine. He wants me to make him a set of arrows, and he enjoys turkey hunting equally as much, if not more, than he enjoys deer hunting. So I was trying to get an idea of what I could build him, but it sounds like I could get away with building the same arrow, but just change the vanes on the back and change the broadhead on the front, and he can get away with using the same arrow.
The turkey Spitfire is a really good broadhead in some way. Uh-huh. You don't want the deer Spitfire on a turkey. Then you just simply go through the arrow, the turkey will fly away. You need to transfer the energy to the turkey really seriously. All you do, what the arrow guy from Aerodynamics do, chop the head right off.
Yeah,
but you know, just like, you know, look at the video from Dave Murray. Yes, he was shooting the turkey with one of his, I think that was on the blade, the new breed blade. That arrow went through that turkey so fast, that 8 seconds, the turkey stopped flapping.
The turkey just stood there after getting hit. Gotcha. Wow.
That's what it
takes. That's incredible. I might actually, because I want to get into turkey hunting this year. I've never done it before. I may end up picking up a set of those trombones.
That's why FOC help. That's why FedEx help, and so on. Your configuration is different because your intent is different. You don't need a pass through. You want, ideally, said, want a tomahawk to hit the turkey so bad the arrow end up just inside the turkey.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now we're coming up on 50 minutes here, and I know we'd like to try to keep these at hour 15, but there's something that I really wanted to bring up, because it is probably the biggest downfall of the arrow vanes, or at least people look at it that way, and it's the fact that arrow vane 2, the types of broadheads you can use are somewhat restricted compared to say a blazer or a typical vane, but when you go to arrow vane 3, the list of broadheads that you can use with those vanes is pretty darn short.
So my question, only for three or four of them. That's it.
Now my question for you is: if rotational control on the arrow is so important, or rotation is so important to gain control of the arrow, why is it? What is it doing to the arrow or the air tunnel? What is it doing that causes the restriction of the broadheads? Like basically, why can't someone use any broadhead they want when using arrow vanes?
First of all, that's where the rotational speed comes into play. Just say, I'll just give you some concept numbers. Assuming the arrow flying at 100, that's the total power, and the arrow is rotating. If each rotation will give you 0.1 value of deceleration, quote unquote, 12 rotation will give you 1.2. You still have 98.8%. The energy of the arrow going direction that you want. In case of arrow vane 2, we're talking 5 times as much, a minimum. Then all of a sudden, you're losing 5 to 10% of your forward energy. And the energy is going somewhere. You're losing your directional control because it's fighting the contact surface and the friction of the blade interact with the air. If that blade gives you a 0.01% directional control, assuming all air broadhead give you 0.01 directional control, if it is simply, say, doing egg rotation, it gives you a 0.05 off-center. Now you put the arrow vane 3, it's 3,000%.
Compared to
now the arrow is... Correct. Now where is your arrow? You're no longer straight.
Now, is that... So the way we just said that, I can see some listeners maybe not quite understanding exactly what we're saying. So is it a balance thing with the broadheads, where the broadheads themselves aren't balanced?
No matter how you balance, there's always discrepancy. And discrepancy will increase as rotational increases because the repeat of time.
Okay. That makes sense. So no broadhead is going to be perfect. And the faster it's traveling and the more it spins, the more effect that disbalance has on the arrow.
Because see, right now, a perfect balance broadhead doesn't exist. A perfect balance propeller doesn't exist. What is the acceptable tolerance is the only question.
What is it about the broadheads that do work with arrow vane that allows them to work?
As the broadhead gets smaller, the factor gets smaller. That's like if you put a drill bit into a pool of water and you turn the drill bit, how much water is being affected? Not much. Now put a paddle bit in it. Now put a 2-inch paddle bit in it. Tell me what the water look like. Right. Now it's drop the speed by 500%. Not much, like a big deal. Not a big deal.
Right. Yeah. No.
As simple as that.
That's a great analogy. So something, for example, I'm going to throw a couple broadhead designs at you. You know, you have the iron, not iron will. Oh my goodness. Like the grizzly broadheads. They're super long. They're like 3 inches long with a gradual taper. Something like that would fly worse than something like, say, a annihilator that's short and narrow. Is that
annihilator is different? Annihilator have what you call a cone relief chamber. So the it actually forces the air to go through that, and then at the tip of the arrow, as the airspeed increases, when airspeed decreases, it decreases the density of the air, which allows the air to pass it easier. Remember, when you increase speed of the air around it, you decrease the friction because the airspeed of that is higher. And as airspeed higher, the density of air is lower. You need to think about the boundary layer separation. That was your problem right there. And remember, the annihilator is very much like the original Ramcat tip. It's an increased size of it. But at the same time, it's much easier to build it as long as you mimic, because then your balancing, your densities are all quite well. But then if you increase it to something like 1 inch, you're starting losing character, right? You're starting losing factors because now you're a solid piece. Your aerodynamics on it and the turbulence, because every single edge now behaves like a vortex generator. And now it's offset water generator because you're turning it. And the air coming in with a scoop, now the scoop is forcing to one side. Now you're giving it more and more aerodynamic characteristic that is non-desirable. Size is critical in arrow front point.
Now, if you had to give let's say someone's listening to this and they're saying, you know, I'm kind of thinking about arrow vane 2. Arrow vane 3 is a completely different beast. If you ask me, you got to shoot something. For arrow vane 3, you either have to shoot one of the arrows that are on the list specified on FireDot's website, or contact George and say, listen, I want to shoot this broadhead. Will it work? But arrow vane 2.
If you drop your speed, then you shouldn't use it. And you know, my customer loved the big look of arrow vane 3. Drop your speed to 260. You'll be fine. Arrow vane 3 is nothing more than a very fancy looking light drag.
Right. But
it's
now.
Just for looks.
And guys, I'm telling you, arrow vane 3 looks so sexy. It really does. It's a lower profile vane. It makes it look longer than it actually is because it's so short. It has like the same thing like a plane has, where it's got like the cup up on the side. It's got the same. It's so cool looking. But
remember, all the arrow vane 3 characteristics won't happen until you hit about 315. Then you've got the aerodynamic elasticity memory. You've got a yawn. You've got the relief of the delta vortex. You've got the trailing vortex all taken care of. I mean, you've got so much stuff going simultaneously. But then, you need speed, but then you limit yourself to only a few broadheads, and you really need super fast spine recovery because the aerobic 3 is doing so much and you don't want to fire it.
Yeah.
You lose.
So the truth is, aerobic 3 is absolutely incredible, but you have to be willing to work within the confines of aerobic 3.
It's just very simple. You don't like the look of the airplane. Want the airplane to look like an Ford F-150. It's not going to fly. Period.
Right.
So you want to go into, say, 250 miles per hour. I don't care what you do to a Ford F-150. It's not going to reach that speed. When you reach that speed, you better be flying. So you can't be that shape.
Right. So in my opinion, you and I have talked about this. We've pretty much hinted at this. For the typical shooter, we recommend AeroVane 2 if you choose to shoot a fired off vane. Unless you're willing to spend the time to really focus on the build and making sure everything's perfect. So since AeroVane 2 is a lot more forgiving with the broadhead, are there general dimensions of the broadheads that someone should look for?
Like 1 3/6, 1 3/8 is the maximum.
At diameter?
You need the width of the cut.
Yep.
And then the second part is that if you, and then the blade better not be solid. It'd be ported. Because
it has to be ported.
Yep, because you want to have the absolute relief of pressure when the blade turns.
Okay. That makes sense. Which is going to lead me into the next question.
Like you shoot an iron wheel. You want to shoot an iron wheel 100, not the iron wheel 150. It's not going to work.
Because it's not ported.
Yes. And then the directional control, unless you want to lower your speed.
Is that because the air can't travel through, like the
broadhead? No, it's not. The air now is resisting with the blade, and the blade is not perfect every time it turns. The direction of this server is not perfect, so the joint of the blade will start to walk.
Yeah, that makes sense. So something like, say, a Montech G5 could work. Something like a Ramcat with the ports on them. I have them down here, but they're kind of buried.
Diamond black may not work well because the diamond black is actually, I mean, I know it's all legal in a lot of states, but the backside of it is not ideal.
And that's because it doesn't have the single bevel in the opposite direction?
No, it's not. It's simply a matter of the ratio of the total amount of porting and the trailing vortex of the blade because it's a true delta wing.
Uh-huh.
The porting is not enough on it.
Okay. That makes sense.
The Diamondback smaller version will work because comparatively, the you still in 1 3/8, not 1.5. The 1.5. The first time I shot it with AeroVane 2, it was really funny. I was looking at this dough and the arrow goes in and
see
he was shooting 45 yards to my right, all the way. The thing is not even 30 yards from me.
And the truth is, people listening to this, let's be honest, people hear that and they say, "Okay, you're exaggerating, Deutsch." But
no, I'm not.
No, you know, there's been multiple studies out there. I know I've referenced it before, but that Tony Warden study that you now have published on your FireKnock website, that to me was one of the most eye-opening things because certain things, like certain builds that had AeroVane on them were better performing than all the others. Others, the way it was built and it had AeroVane on it, it didn't perform as well as other arrows.
Oh, yeah, and it was degraded so much more. I mean, the spec part is that most of Tony's process do not have product on it.
And the reason I love that study so much is that it was a truly unbiased study where it wasn't trying to prove that one product was better than another. No, he didn't go into it with a predetermined notion. He went in there with a true scientific process and tested them based on the facts of the results. And that, to me, is worth the point of gold.
The sad part is that those combination of tests will never, ever, ever be enough. Because just based on his draw length, his draw weight, and so on, the moment you put the different broadhead, different draw cycle, different bowl, different air rest, oh my gosh, I mean, it just never ends.
Yeah.
That's the reason, just like the archery industry at this moment is pretty much going into what you call a piecemeal. Imagine you're building a piecemeal vehicle and they don't really actually work with each other. You say, I really like a Chevy body, but I want a Stellantis engine, but I want a Ford transmission. Okay. Because that's the way I want to combine them. How good do you think your car is? Not or your bad. Vehicle is? Because you're just like, I really like this. I really love those ginormous tractor tires. But then I go ahead and get myself a Honda Civic. Can you put those tires on? Yes, you can. But after you, what are you doing with it? You're going to take your kids to school with those ginormous tractor tires. Man, it's very cool.
Imagine having someone with a Honda Civic riding down the road. The tractor tires are, you know, outset beyond the body. That would look hilarious. I'd honestly probably pay money to see that.
Yeah, I know. But then ask yourself, how long do you think those tires will last and how noisy and ridiculous it will be to drive it?
Mm-hmm.
But then if you only have one vehicle, a Honda Civic, and you decided to use it for pooling on your farm, you've got a point there. But look,
it's all about how do you want to use it? What's the application? It's really
the worst part. You said right now we are assuming people able to just combine. I mean, just like people believe that they can buy, just pay money, buy the most expensive stuff. I did that in my whole life, all the way until I turned 55. I always buy the most expensive of every possible thing, regardless of what I'm going to do with it. And because it's the most, it has to be the best. And then you combine the best together. Does it do exactly what you want? I mean, the more you learn what not to do. But at the same time, you know, the fact is that some people are good enough to sell ice to a refrigerator and freezer to Eskimos. And that is a skill. No, it's not a joke. It's a skill. And I know a lot of people, I mean, I've got a marketing degree, but I have met salespeople that can actually do that.
And it's really unfortunate.
It will convince you so much to the point that you, I mean, best example, you're talking a freaking nuclear cameras here. I bought Sandlot clothing. Okay. Should I take more?
So, and that was that before or after the lawsuit?
I didn't even know the lawsuit. I mean, I recognized how stupid I was after I got married and hunted for that 117 days. I don't know if I told you the story. I was arguing with my wife. I was complaining to my wife that she is talking to the dryer. I need to go hunt because I need to recharge my clothing.
Uh-huh.
And halfway through the process, it hit me and I just sit on the freaking floor in front of the dryer and laugh at this guy loud. See? WTF. Carbon with a dryer? I did the cyclotron. Come on. We're talking freaking... I'm a nuclear chemist, okay?
Can you recharge carbon? Can carbon actually be recharged?
Yes, you can at 1,250 degrees Celsius.
Oh, my God. So then how do you... So hunting clothes that say that they could be recharged, is it even possible?
It's not.
That's amazing. I mean,
it's a known fact. In order to activate charcoal that fully fueled, you need to raise the temperature to 1,250 degrees or something like that.
That's insane.
Do you know what 1,250 degrees Celsius is like?
Hot.
Yes. I mean, let me give you an idea so you understand, okay?
We're going to convert it. Dorg is looking it up right now. I think he's going to convert it to Fahrenheit. And something tells me it's going to be much higher number for Fahrenheit. While he's looking this up, because I think we're about to wrap this episode up here in just a minute. But one of the cool things, we said a few episodes ago that we wanted to, you know, mention, a bow setup and give you our recommendation of an arrow. To be honest with you, I forgot about that. So what I'd like to do is catch up and maybe do
Let me confirm. I got the numbers between. Okay. The carbon recharge temperature, typical to refer to temperature needed to regenerate or reactive spent activated carbon, which is charcoal. And it go between 600 and 900 degrees Celsius, okay? Let's give you an idea. We're talking 1,112. That's the lower.
Fahrenheit?
1,012 degrees Celsius. Not Fahrenheit. Or as much as 1,650 degrees Fahrenheit to recharge them.
That's hot.
That means at that temperature, the carbon charcoal finally able to relieve the molecules it captured. Because I remember this, because I was a really big in fish. Having fish. Remember, we got active charcoal in the fish. That is so expensive. How do I regenerate it? Can I do that in an oven? No. The oven only go up to
600 degrees Fahrenheit.
Celsius.
Wow. What about like a kiln? If somebody had a kiln, that would probably work, wouldn't it? Like a pottery kiln?
Yeah. But then how the hell did you activate the carbon in your shirt that you've got Gore-Tex, got all the carbon, Polartec, or Cordura on it? Everything's irrelevant.
Yeah, your carbon will be recharged, but that's all that's going to be left is the carbon at the bottom of the kiln. So,
At one point, it makes sense for people to get the carbon clothing and then sleeve the carbon into the body. That's the only way that will work. It's the same thing I did when I was a character. We got Typhoid clothing with carbon in it. So when we went 1.5 months, we throw the Typhoid clothing because we can't recharge it. It's not worth recharging.
Now, does it?
Okay, so you use carbon clothing? Answers yes. You have to put pockets so you can slide the carbon pads in it.
So in order to have a true scent controlling garment that would last for multiple seasons, you'd have to physically be able to replace the carbon in the jacket or the pants or whatever.
Or you move away from that and you go into the source. which is silver or copper. Silver is much better. Silver iron would kill all contact element because of floating ions.
Is that easier to recharge, or does it not need to?
Oh, you don't need to. It will last forever and ever.
Really?
Yes, that's the reason. I mean, I'll give you one example. During the Afghanistan war, our boys' feet are rotting. We're talking U.S. Marines, armies, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Then they all of a sudden, you know, the guys, like, if you lose the feet, how the hell do you become a soldier?
Right.
So they bought silver-laced, silver-threaded socks to kill all bacteria. No more smell. Because that's there's awesome. No bacteria, no smell. And then since bacteria come from, you don't lose your feet. Everybody end up with plum feet.
I think I'm going to need to get that for myself, man, because my feet sweat
other. Seriously, I still got at that one point, it's going to be called Excent, S-C-N-T. They got really nice undergarment with silver on it. It is fantastic. You wear it all day long, it never smells. And what happened is that 2 or 4 days later, you just wash it, the dirt will come off, but it does not smell.
I might have to find myself
some of that. People don't understand, I mean, dipping out there. I mean, this is the reason I always have problems with that. There's so many good stuff. People need to understand the fundamental principle of it. Just like, that was one of the most ridiculous. They put titanium in a sand killer. Did titanium kill sand?
I don't think so.
Well, people bought it.
See, and that's what's really frustrating to me. And honestly, one of the things that I love about you personally as an individual, because a lot of companies, and again, like I said, we're not going to mention anyone, but companies care more about selling you a product than they care about giving you a product that actually works. And to me, as a consumer, that's really frustrating because I work hard for my money. What I love about you is we'll sit here and we talk about AeroVane and we talk about Aero Concept and the benefits of it, but we also give things that aren't fire knock. Like you said, blazer vanes are great as long as you're shooting under 270 feet per second. And maybe you don't need Aero Concept. Maybe you just need a stiffer arrow, you know? So what I love about the conversations we have is it's not just about fire knock stuff. It is truly about education and giving and letting people make their own decision on what they feel would be best.
Let me tell you something. I'm old enough to really able to say this. Most people who hunt don't have enough education to make an educated decision. That was the saddest part. And most people who buy final products are older. And they are usually your retired manager. The average age who bought final product are 45 and up. There's very few people who bought final under that age. So they have the time, they have the effort. They are not those 15-second advertising, I buy that guys.
Yeah.
Those people, they spend the money wisely because they have age. And they have enough education and life experience to know what's right and wrong. But even that itself, it's just like, the power of marketing and blanket marketing is absolutely phenomenal because there's two main companies that did that and it's no denying it. They did it, and the moment they did it, they win the market. Because unfortunately, I know I'm going to get a lot of American consumers are not educated enough to blindly believe, including myself, which is well educated enough. And just like when the Sandlot clothing come by, I bought it. I absolutely bought it. I bought the entire set, MT-040 with Stand Shield, the whole nine yards.
It's because it sounds great. The concept sounds awesome.
I know. I mean, you paid extra $80, $90 for the packer. Does it do? No, it absolutely. I mean, the first day I wear it, I mean, does it build your confidence? Absolutely. I would have bought an Ozonics in a heartbeat now.
Yeah, right. So, like I said, first off, is there anything else that we want to talk about with the veins? I think we've pretty much talked about the veins.
No, I think pretty much we covered it because I just want the people to understand if the rotational ratio and the offset capability and the error, because you're stacking error significantly. But then when you reduce the amount of error that is going to create, the rotational become not as important. I mean, it's pure math. We're talking significant numbers.
Okay.
I know right. It's chemistry, okay. But it really is. Because you think about it, if it is 0.1, you're at 8, it's less than 1%. But if you're at 300.1, you're at 3%. No, or better still, imagine each of them will give you a 0.1 degree off from center. You got 8. Now you're less than 1 degree there. Now you're 3 degrees off at 20 yards. What's the 3 degree off at 60 yards? You don't even hit the broad side of the barn.
Yeah. Exactly. Anyone who's messed around with angles or anything really. Like when you're using a telescope, you don't really have to angle it all that far. And you can, you know, that's the difference between having the moon in perfect picture and not having the moon in frame at all. You know, yeah. So the farther the distance, the more effect an angle has. So with that being said, I did forget the last couple of episodes. I forgot to give you some bow setups. So I have two bow setups here. They're kind of similar, which I think makes it kind of interesting, but uh-huh. they're two different brands. The uh-huh. first one, somebody wrote in, they have a Hoyt VTM, uh-huh. 70 pound, draw, a 29 inch draw length, uh-huh. 80% let off. Uh-huh. They hunt both turkey and deer, and their shots are typically under 60 yards. Okay. What arrow would you recommend for that?
And let's if you're the best.
Let's add one more dynamic to it. Give me a arrow that does not use arrow concept, and then give me an arrow that does use arrow concept.
I would go with Goldtip 300, Goldtip 22, at 29 uh-huh. inch, with blazer, and then go with 125 grain points. That's a good setup with a V.
Okay, and that's non-fire knot.
Correct.
Okay, and what about...
I'm using fire knot on it, it's the V-knot. Otherwise, you have V-knot. To use the Goldtip 22 knot.
Okay, V-knot, either the V-knot or the Goldtip 22 knot.
Correct.
Gotcha.
Now, what if they want... FOC for that would be good because you have the 3-inch spine and 29 inch. That one's a good combination. For all around, I would go with... For lightweight, I would go with a CarbonTech Cheetah 55-75. 28 inch. I would go with arrow concept with the aluminum insert, 6-inch tubing, arrow fin 2, S-knock, and I'll stick with 100 grain, if not 85 grain. It will fly like you don't believe.
That's good to hear because I've made the decision to drop down to 85 grains, which is really exciting. I'm super excited to see what that does. Now the other bow now is kind of similar, except it's a Matthews VXR, 70 pound draw. I think we're seeing a pattern here. 29.5 inch draw length, 85% draw, let off. And they have the 31.5. So the 31.5 inch axle to axle, not the shorter 29.
Okay. Again, without arrow concept, the go to 22 is still, I mean, with that bow, you may be better off using the Finock Arrow Weave 300 because you drop the arrow speed a little bit slower. That's without arrow concept. And then go with a Goldtip 22 insert, a basic 100 grain broadhead. That will give you a quite good combination because the VXR is a significantly less aggressive cam compared to the Hoyt. It's a significantly slower bow too.
And what about veins?
I would say it doesn't matter. The speed's not going to be there. Okay. So Airwing 2, Blazer, it's going to be about the same. You're looking at you'll be hard pushed to push 285 feet per second. So you're around the borderline.
Gotcha. Now, what about if they wanted to build arrow concept? What does your arrow look like then?
I would say that would be similar on a 246 for durability. But if you want to build a 300, you can go with something like a 27 or 28.5 inch shaft and stick with the arrow concept 1.0. With the 3LS and the inside tubing, unfortunately, you'll instantly drop the speed because you're adding weight. So go back to the Goldtip 22 for lighter weight because it's significantly lighter. And you pretty much get everything you want. Remember, all the newer high let off bow having a large diameter have a lot of benefit.
Yeah. Which we've talked about in the past, guys. So if you're interested, if maybe you missed that episode or you forget the benefits of the 300, I think it was two episodes ago on the Aero Science series. It might not have been two episodes ago as far as the whole podcast goes, but it was two Science of Aero series episodes prior to this. So with that said, I think this is a great place to wrap up. We've talked about the veins, I think, mm-hmm. ad nauseum at this point. And we talked about the broadheads, what you can use, what you can't use, the pros and the cons of different types of vein combinations.
Yeah, I want people remember this specific for this episode is that it's not just the vein. You need to think of how the entire arrow behaves the way it was inside your bow when you launch it.
Exactly.
I mean, what's his name? The guy who do high FOC. Every spine, what did he create? He do not let the arrow flex.
Mm-hmm.
He dropped, because with that, the drop, he dropped, a lot of things will go away immediately. But then it's the same thing. If you bought a Ferrari, since you can't drive it, you go ahead and put, say, 500 pounds of sand on it. The car will drive like 100 Accord. Great. That's why you're buying a Ferrari to start with.
That makes sense. I think that's a great place to end it here. If you buy a Ferrari, why try to drive it like a Honda Accord?
A Honda Accord's not bad, you know. If you know cars, Honda engine is one of the better ones.
Oh yeah, 100%. Guys, thank you so much again for joining us here on another episode of the Wing and Tail Boys. As always, we really hope you guys got some value out of this. This science series, like we keep saying over and over, it's really designed to break down the different characteristics of aero flight. We want to give you all of the information and really help you understand what your choices are going to do or what effect your choices have on your aero. You know, oh, I want to shoot heavy FOC. Great. Awesome. What is that going to do to your aero? And are you comfortable giving that up? You want to shoot a really thin aero. Great. That's awesome. But know what that's going to do to your aero and do what you need to fix it. You know, so if you like what you heard in these episodes, if you like this episode, any of the ones in the past, make sure you share them with a friend, a family member. Talk about it. Maybe you just want to send it to them and call bullshit. I don't care. Send us what you think. We love to talk about it. And when we get those in, we'll talk about them on the episode. Keep sending in your bow setups. We love to have them. We want to give you our recommendations. So until then, keep them coming in. Leave those reviews coming. And until next time, remember, success is just a commitment away. Have a great week, ladies and gentlemen.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.